Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Melachim Aleph, Perek Hey, the fifth Perek of Melachim Aleph. And this is the Perek where Shlomo starts to act with his newfound power. Up till now it's been establishing the power. Now we're going to see two of the major actions that Shlomo is going to take in order to go to the next step. So we're first told that Shlomo has absolute control, what's called Mimshala, right? He is Moishel, he is in control of everything from the river, to the land of Plishtim, right? So from river to sea, which is unfortunately the phrase of another group who wishes to control Israel today. Nonetheless, this is where the nation of Israel was well before that group called Hamas arrived. And everybody in this land who was not part of Israel, and those who were part of Israel, would all be Magishim Mincha. They would bring offerings to Shlomo. They would in fact bring tributes to Shlomo Melech. And it describes how much Shlomo would consume, or how much his household would consume on a daily basis, and from all kinds of delicacies, whether it be grain delicacies or meats, that everybody would provide for Shlomo HaMelech. And he would be Rodeh, which means control, further control, even from beyond the river, from Tifsach to Aza. And Tifsach is a debate in the Mefarshim, how far that is, but we're talking pretty deep beyond. This is based on the conquest of David HaMelech. And in this description, we're told that everybody dwelled safely in Israel this time. Ish tachas gafno v'tachas ta'enosai. Everybody under their vine, under their fig tree, from Dan until Be'er Sheva, that's the north, to the very south, all the days of Shlomo. So really, this is an ideal time. There's tranquility, there's peace, there's harmony. This is what we're told about. Now, into this, the Tanakh adds an interesting point, and that is that Shlomo had 40,000 horses for his chariots. That's a lot of horses, and 12,000 chariots themselves, and those who are in charge of financing Shlomo's household. Remember, the prefects, the Nitzavim from last Perek, were in charge of not just financing his house, but also all of these horses as well. And it goes on to describe how each of them would get what they needed on a monthly basis. At this point, the Perek now introduces a section describing the wisdom of Shlomo, once again, that it describes in a very unique way. It says that his roichav lev, that his expansive heart, was like kachol al she'al sasiyam, was like the sea on the banks of the sea, like the sand on the banks of the sea, which is interesting because that's usually the description given to Israel, which may indicate a connection between Shlomo's wisdom and his being king of Israel. And in fact, everybody around knew how wise he was, and he was wiser than anybody else. Even Eitan HaEzrachi, who is a curious and curious character in Tanakh. We'll have to work out who he is. And in fact, the Tanakh tells us that he was in charge. He was wiser than. It talks about how he was wise to even know about. It says, "Vaydaber al haba'imov ala oif." He spoke about the animals, about the birds, about the creeping, crawling things, about the aquatic life, about all the growing life in the world around him. This is what Shlomo HaMelech knew. And at this point in time, now a peace deal is struck because he turns to his northern neighbors. His northern neighbors are, in fact, the place of the king of Hiram. Hiram is the king of Tzor, which is Tyre today, up the coast northwards from Israel. And he sends a message to him, and he says, "Look, you know, David, my father, and you had a good peace accord between the two of you. And David was never able to bring, to make the Beis HaMikdash. But now there's nobody, there's no attrition, there's no problems, there's no enemies. Hashem has allowed me to be successful. And now I want to make this house. But I know that there's no one like, no one has wood like you in Tyre up in Lebanon. Please allow me to have some wood." And Hiram was overjoyed. And he says, "Baruch Hashem Ayom," and he blesses Hashem for this. And he says, "You're such a wise son." And he gives great permission to Shlomo. And they make a bartering arrangement in which Shlomo is allowed to send his people to cut the cedar wood. And he, in return, goes and sends food, chitim, a bartering deal to the north, to the Lebanese. And at this point in time, the end of the parak, it describes how Shlomo HaMelech would have this interesting rotation. Where it was almost like a workman's tax, where he would send workers. That we're told about 30,000 people would be in charge of both cutting down trees and going to the quarry to get quarry stone for the base of Migdash. And they were on rotations in which, you know, every so often there would be a switch in the amount of people. Those people would go home, and then they would serve their government by going out beyond this. And this is how Shlomo HaMelech amassed the necessary equipment, the necessary materials to make the Beis HaMikdash. Now, just a few things to think about in this perek. The perek itself is somewhat self-explanatory. But the question is, first of all, why the horses? Why is Shlomo so interested in horses? The Malbim points out that this was actually, interestingly enough, a deterrence. The reason why he had the horses and the chariots was very simple. This was the most modern technology of the time, as we've seen that the Plishtim had them well before the nation of Israel had them. And this was what kept his enemies in check. Having a strong military meant to say he didn't need to use it. Meaning to say a strong budget in this area, and mean to say that there would not be rebellions. There would not be rebellions internally and externally. So it's to avoid war, and it was to control his people, which is why he needed them. The problem is that if you read the Torah very carefully in Parashat Shoftim, the Torah says, "V'lo yarbe lo noshim, v'lo yarbe lo susim." I apologize. The king is not allowed to have too many wives. That's all. We're going to just deal with that later on. But he's also not allowed to amass too many horses. It's interesting that he's doing that. If you do the count of the number of horses, 40,000 to 12,000 chariots, there are too many horses for the chariots, which the Radak points out is an indication that he got some of these horses for a sense of power, pride and power, more than simply keeping the nation in check, which is already where we see a little bit of a problem. We're going to see that it expands later on. How is Shlomo HaMelech's wisdom so different to everybody else? What really distinguishes it from anybody else's wisdom? So the Mahari, who's one of the earlier Mefarshim, one of the Rishon and the medieval commentators, says, well, everybody generally understands things sequentially. Idea after idea, experience after experience builds a picture. Whereas Shlomo HaMelech was instantaneous. He could understand everything in one grasp, in one moment. That was because it was divinely instigated. What does it mean to say that Shlomo HaMelech spoke unto the animals or unto the plants and to the fish? What does that mean? So Rashi points out the most basic idea is option is that really he just understood the physical properties of every element. Long before Humphrey Davies came along, long before we set up the periodic table, you know what? Shlomo HaMelech was able to understand every part of the equation and how it all fitted together. That's the Chochmah of Shlomo. However, Rashi also quotes a Medrash, which is quoted by the Radak, that it wasn't maybe only the physical elements of the physical properties of every element, it was also the metaphysical properties. He looked at the halachas which pertain to every living and organic and inorganic organism in the world, and he understood why those laws stemmed out of its metaphysical existence. So it all came together to him, all but one, and that was Parah Adumah. And then finally, the perek closes with his deal with Hiram. We're going to have to see, and we're just pointing this out just for further thought. When you read the account in Melachim Aleph, which is what we're learning now, and you read the same account of this interaction between Hiram and Shlomo, which appears in Devarim, so Direi Yomim Beis, Perek Beis, you'll see that the conversation is a little bit different. Who sends messengers to who, and how much is allowed, who's doing the chopping down, it's a little bit complicated, which the Mefarshim struggle with. The Malbim suggests maybe there were different periods, or maybe there were different messengers sent at different times, but nonetheless, as we're going through Melachim, we're going to have to be aware and conscious of the fact that the story is only half a story, because the other half of the story is actually being framed in Direi Yomim. In the meantime, well, let's call off today, and I have a wonderful and meaningful day.